one pasuk, which seems almost to be like an addendum pasuk, at the end of Parshat Bo, has so many implications, both in the Chumash as well as for our lives, that it deserves some attention, that it deserves some understanding. Let's take a look at the psukim that come right before. The children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Sukkot. This is now Klai Yisrael have left Egypt. About 600,000 men on foot aside from children, and here's our key pasuk. Also a mixed multitude went up with them, and flock and cattle, very much livestock. They baked the dough that they took out of Egypt unto leavened cake, for they could not be leavened, for they were driven from Egypt, for they could not delay, nor they had made provisions for themselves, and Klai Yisrael were in Egypt for 430 years, and we've spoken about that in the past. This small group, which wasn't so small as we'll see, of people, a mixed multitude went up with them, and the mixed multitude is put together in the same pasuk with the flock and the cattle, which is also fascinating, which we'll touch on as well. Who were this Erev Rav? The Erev Rav, a great mixture, literally Erev is mixture, like Erev at night is a mixture between daytime and nighttime. Rav is great. So Rashi tells us in source number 2, Ta'arovet Umot, a mixture of people of various nations, Shogerim, who were converts, came with Klal Yisrael. Now, if we take a look just at a cursory view of who this Erev Rav was and what havoc they wreaked, that will be level 1. Just taking a look at basic ideas from Chazal. Then what we're going to do is take a look at 2 focuses on who the Erev Rav are. What was the core mida that they had that tripped them up, that tripped us up ultimately? And how does this Erev Rav affect us ad hayom hazeh, ikvasa de Mashiach, the preliminary moments before the Mashiach comes? And that's where we're going to head today. As well as we're going to have to discuss on all of these levels what was Kivyachov, we could understand Moshe Rabbeinu's mindset in accepting this Erev Rav. So let's just start on the most basic level. Rav Mok. He quotes Rashi, source number 3a. This was a mixture from other peoples who had converted. Targum Yonatan, adopting Rabbi Akiva's opinion, the Mechilta, indicates there were 240 myriads, tens of thousands of these converts. The mixed multitude comprised 2 distinct classes. The first group consists of Egyptian slaves, prisoners of war, and the second group of Egyptians who have been convinced prior to the 10th plague of God's truth and sought to show allegiance with him. And this latter group, which the Medrash Rabbah called, are Ksherim Shemitzrayim, the sincere among Egypt. And we'll just say as a disclaimer before even taking one step forward, when we're going to talk about the Erev Rav here, we're going to talk about these converts that's having had such a negative effect, we cannot therefore say, and we should not say, that all converts are challenging for Klal Yisrael. We know, we'll see this Chazal down the road in Mirtz Hashem today, that Hashem brought us among the nations in order to be able to accumulate converts, because the converts have something tremendous to offer the Jewish people. We're not talking about today how converts are a terrible thing for Klal Yisrael. We're talking about specifically the Erev Rav, this specific group, and we should not then learn it and then deduce it referring to all converts. Let's continue. So we have 2 groups. It could be the prisoners of war, the lower class, or it could be those who really were believing, wow, you know, there's something to this God, and they wanted to embrace it. The Zohar in several places describes how Moshe wanted to lead these converts to even deeper love of God and a stronger faith. Hashem warned him that this multitude did not have the moral strength to withstand the ordeals facing Israel. Yet Moshe persisted because he was totally infused with his idealistic spirit, did not believe that the mixed multitude would ever lose their conviction. The thought that the time was right for the fulfillment of divine providence to Abraham, you should go out, Rechush Gadol, what is the Rechush Gadol? Spiritual treasures. And what's the greatest spiritual treasures? To have all of these converts. Rav Munk adds, perhaps Moshe Rabbeinu had a wife who was a convert. His stepmother was a convert, had a particular affinity toward converts. Others contend that Moshe wanted to fill the void left by the death of 2,400,000 Jews during the plague of darkness. Moshe argued that these people were already convinced of Hashem's omnipotence upon witnessing his miracles in Egypt, and how much more so would they trust him when they would see the deadly miracles in the desert. Unfortunately, the confidence Moshe had in the mixed multitude was misplaced, and we know that these were the ones that led the whole movement at the Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf, and they were the ones who indeed were the instigators, built the golden calf, and that was the downward spiral for them as well as for Klal Yisrael. It's interesting, the Yosnaim Latorah, based on the Quran, source number 4, says already from the start you can tell that this group was not going to have much success. And that's why the Hebrew of the Pasuk in 4 is V'gam Eruv Rav Allah Itam. There are two words to use with them, Itam and Imam. Itam means that they're with them, but they're with them just in an external type of way. Imam is that emotional connection, which is a deep connection. To be im with somebody is a connective form. So therefore, since the Pasuk says that they went itam with them, but not imam, together with them emotionally, with the same mindset, the same spirit of focus, we see that already from the get-go, these people were doomed for failure. And that's why the Yosnaim Latorah says it's no wonder that it's linked, as we noted, with the flock and the cattle. It's very similar to what Avraham Avinu said to his two servants, Shulachem Poim HaChamor, sit here with the donkey. You and the donkey are not much better. That the Eruv Rav were already foreshadowing was going to be people that weren't going to be, and again, we're talking about the Eruv Rav, don't broaden this to other areas, weren't going to be much better than the animals. We know, and this Rav Bear brings down, because Chazal tell us this all the time in Source 5, that when you look throughout Chumash, you will notice that there are two languages used to describe the Jewish people. They're referred to as Bnei Israel, and they're referred to as Ha'am, the nation. Kol makom shenemar Ha'am, Chazal tell us, lashon gnayu. Anytime it uses the word Am, you know we're dealing with the Eruv Rav. We're dealing with the part of the people that were not the believers. V'chol makom shenemar Yisrael, lashon shevachu. Kala Yisrael, Bnei Yisrael, that's the sign of praise. So, v'hi ha'am ki mitonanim, v'yivku ha'am, v'yar ha'am ki boshesh moshe lavo. So, anytime it uses the word am, that's like red lights go off. We know that we're dealing with the Eruv Rav, and they are the ones, if you take a look throughout Chumash, when the people are complaining, we want to go back to Egypt, and we're not happy, and we're dissatisfied, 9 times out of 10, you will find it's the Am who are leading the way, and that's telling us it was this group of Eruv Rav. And indeed, as Rabbi Adler in Parsha Illuminations tell us, the sin of the eagle was instigated by the astrologers, the magicians of the Eruv Rav, who joined with Klal Yisrael. The eagle was not the initiative of the children of Yitzchak and Yaakov, was the handiwork of the newcomers to Klal Yisrael. The newcomers were idealistic, enthusiastic idealists in their devotion to Hashem. After all, 80% of Klal Yisrael were not permitted to leave Mitzrayim and to participate in Kriyas Yam Suf. An enormous number of Eruv Rav were permitted. So obviously we understand that these lofty individuals embrace the teachings of Hashem with their fullest energies. The problem, however, was that when they encountered an extremely stressful situation, they fell back on solutions from their past with which they were comfortable. When they saw Moshe did not return, they felt abandoned, leaderless, and they went back to what was familiar to them, and they made an egel. So on the most basic level, we're referring to the Eruv Rav that went itam, not imam. Moshe Rabbeinu was gung-ho on these being converts. Hashem says, not such a great idea. Moshe Rabbeinu was a believer in them. He felt this was the Rechush Gadol, this was the great booty, the spiritual gain they would get from Egypt. These were the people, the Am, that brought to the demise of the Jewish people throughout their sojourn in the desert, and the Egel HaZahav is a prime example where they were the instigators in this. And clearly, when Klal Yisrael are around these people, so it impacts us, and we fall as a result. As Rav Gamliel points out in Source 7 in Tiva Torah, he says, you have to be careful who you surround yourself with, because whom you surround yourself with is going to impact you. And he brings down here a very beautiful idea in the squiggly. V'yishna imra yidua ba'olam, there's a well-known statement in the world. Shem sorech kol kach levakesh alabanim shiyu tzadikim. When you're davening to Hashem that your children should be tzadikim, that's important. But you know what's even more important? Your ikar bakashahi shechavarim yu tzadikim. Your real request should be that their friends should be good friends. Because we know, you tell somebody who their friends are, you know who the person is. And we know that friends have the ability just to bring people, Rahman Utslam, off the straight and narrow path. So this was the problem, that it wasn't just about taking the Erev Rav as part of Klal Yisrael, it was the effect that the Erev Rav had on the rest of the Jewish people. So that's a very basic view of the Erev Rav. There were these converts who were gung-ho, and they went back to what was you know, familiar to them, and this is what happened. Okay, that's level one, the superficial view, what we've learned in school. Well, no, don't need to spend more time on it. Now let's take a look at two more ideas. Obviously, there's a lot more here, but I'd like to look at two more ideas of what the Erev Rav is about. Who were they? What they were about? What quality they have? What lesson we learned? And what impact they have on Ayom HaZeh? The first is from a new sefer of ours, Noam Vinsk on Chumash. I'll just share here personally. I saw an ad right after Yontif that there was this sefer, the Noam Vinsk Rebbe on Chumash. And I would go into my bookstore here, like, every few days, new, and he still hasn't gotten it in, and it's only on Breishin and Shemot. And when I was in Baltimore a week and a half ago, so one of my hosts said to me, you know, do you want to go shopping? You want to go to Target? I said, if you're ready to take me somewhere, I want to go to a bookstore. She said, what type of bookstore? Like, is there any type of bookstore? There's only one type of bookstore to go to, yeah? I said, Sfarim store. So we went in, and the first thing I looked for was the Noam Vinsk Rebbe. And my kids saw it right away. Even if you got your sefer, I was driving everyone crazy. You know, it's the Noam Vinsk is out on Chumash. How do you not have it? So B'chastei Hashem, I just brought it back with me a few days ago. So we're going to learn a piece from the Noam Vinsk Rebbe Zatzal. Source 8. The Erev Rav that came up together with Bnei Yisrael were the cause of much trouble for the fledging nation. During the desert trek, these people were the fomenters of discouragement, frustration, and trouble. Now, who were they? So, this is based on the Arizal. The Arizal, which is Kabbalistic, so I can't explain it to you. At the same time, it's important to look at. The Arizal says the following. He says, after the sin of Adam HaRishon, we're in the arrow in 8, many sparks of Kedusha, referred to as Nitzotzos, were scattered around the world. These nitzotzos, it's a Kabbalistic concept. These nitzotzos mean there was a potential of tremendous kedusha, which just didn't ever develop. And so what happened to these nitzotzos? They became the souls of the Dor HaMabul and Dor HaFluga, but they sinned again and remained unrectified. A large number of nitzotzos then descended to Mitzrayim, where they awaited rectification by Bnei Yisrael during Golos Mitzrayim. They later became the Erev Rav that left Mitzrayim together with Bnei Yisrael. I'll just make mention, if we take a peek at Source 15, Rav Brazil brings down another Kabbalistic idea that these people are alluded to in the story of Avraham Avinu and Stone, where Stone says, Melech Stone says, Tein li anefesh v'rechush kach lach. Give me the souls, and you can have the booty. And Avraham Avinu doesn't take anything. And Avraham Avinu, on his level, is critiqued that these souls would have been souls that could have been brought up to higher levels of Kedusha. And he says, these souls became the souls of the Erev Rav. It's the same idea that we're speaking about here. Whether it's Dor HaMabul, Dor HaFluga, Dor Stone, these were people whose souls needed to go through a rectification. They messed up on round one and two. They needed to come back now and be elevated. The Arizal continues that the Erev Rav did not participate in the mitzvahs of Korban Pesach and Milah on the night before the Exodus, 9. They joined only the next day, when Bnei Yisrael were ready to leave. When the question arose whether they should be permitted to join them, it was Moshe Rabbeinu who wished to take them out of Mitzrayim so that they could finally get the tikkun, the rectification they needed. But Hashem was not pleased with this choice. He knew they were not yet ready to join Bnei Yisrael, since they were still sullied by Tumah and Sin. Albeit they had gone through many levels of rectification, but Kadosh Baruch Hu, who sees the Pnimius, understood they were still not there. And Moshe Rabbeinu felt like they've been through enough. These souls need to be elevated. They need to join Klal Yisrael. And that was the mindset of Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore you understand the distinction in the Pesukim. The Pesuk says, it happened on that very day, Hashem took the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt in their legions, Al Tzivotam. The Klal Yekar asks why the Torah changes its language from the earlier Pesuk, where it says, Yatsu kol Tzivos Hashem. The legions of Hashem left Egypt. At first they're called the legions of Hashem, and later their own legions. We can understand the change with the Arizal explanation. At first the Torah was talking about Bnei Yisrael themselves, the ones who were included in the promise to Avraham Avinu of 430 years. We are called Tzivos Hashem, the legions of Hashem. The Erev Rav is not. Hashem did not want them to join Bnei Yisrael. The second pasuk describes not only those who were included in Hashem's promise, but all those who actually left Mitzrayim. Those included the Erev Rav, and those are the general legions, and not necessarily the legions of Hashem. I will make mention, before we take this idea one step further, a fantastic insight of the Novinsky Rebbe, and knowing the personality of Novinsky Rebbe, you understand, who I got Omer, this is something that's so aligned with his persona. He says, this says the Arizal helps us understand the Psukim at the end of our Parsha. So he's quoting here an Arizal that says, Hashem said to Moshe, Kadesh liko b'chor peter ko rechem b'nei Yisrael. Hashem told them the law of peter rechem, the firstborn of b'nei Yisrael, have to be sanctified. Then the pasuk says, Vayomer Moshe la'am, Moshe spoke to the people, remember the day that you left Egypt, don't eat chametz. So what's going on here? Hashem told them to tell b'nei Yisrael about the law of the peter rechem, and Moshe Rabbeinu tells them about, remember the day you left Egypt. So again, we see this distinction here. Hashem told Moshe to speak to Bnei Yisrael and tell them about the Kedusha of the Bechoros. Moshe did not feel comfortable doing so, since the mitzvah Pinyon Ben only applies to Bnei Yisrael, who experienced the Nisim of Lo Pesach, and not to the Erev Rav, who still had the remnants of Tumas Mitzrayim. Fearing that the Erev Rav, were an 11 in the bracket, would feel alienated at being excluded from the first mitzvah after joining Klal Yisrael, Moshe chose to speak not only to Bnei Yisrael, but also to the Am, which we spoke about, the Am is the Erev Rav, and give them a mitzvah that applied to everyone in Lo Yitzrayim, not to eat chametz on Pesach. That is why Moshe added the words, Hayom Atem Yotzim, today you are leaving. He is hinting to the Erev Rav, since they had not joined Bnei Yisrael at night, only leaving with them by day, they were not included in the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBet. Now this in general, before again we move on, this is almost like a parenthesis, however very important, what a tremendous lesson we learn. When you're talking to somebody who is not included in the conversation, in something you're about to say, then think about maybe change the topic. Think about how they're going to feel. Have that sensitivity and say, you know what, maybe this is not the appropriate thing to say at this particular time, because there's someone sitting here who, whatever the situation is, doesn't have married children, doesn't have, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, to talk about the great shidduch that you just made, when there are people sitting there who have older single children, it's just, it's not appropriate. Just that sensitivity is the hallmark of Jews. Now, we might add to the Arizal's esoteric explanation. Let's go back to where we started from. Moshe reasoned that all the Erev Rav were missing was to fulfill the mitzvah Milah and Korban Pesach, right? They weren't there that night, so they didn't do the mitzvah Milah and Korban Pesach. He hoped that by teaching them the halachas of Pesach, he would instill in their incomplete souls a spark of Kedusha that would bring them closer to rectification, that they'd be ready the following year to bring the Korban, Bris Milah, and the Korban. But Hashem knew that this would not happen. The next year, B'nai Israel brought the Korban Pesach after the Erev sinned and caused many Jews to sin with the Egel. At that point, they were forbidden to bring the Korban Pesach because they were idolaters. And this explains, and we're going to develop it, but this explains the beginning of Parsha B'Shalach. Parsha B'Shalach begins, Vayhi B'Shalach Paro et Ha'am, V'lo Necham Elokim Derech Plishim Ki Karufu, Ki Amar Elokim Pein Yinachem Ha'am Birota Mechama. Over and over again we have the Am. We're worried, Hashem was worried that the Am would see war and just freak out. So why would B'nai Israel be afraid of war? Hadn't they just witnessed the miraculous defeat of a mighty country at the hand of Hashem? The answer is Hashem was not concerned about B'nai Israel. The pasuk speaks of Ha'am, the people, which, as we mentioned, refers to the Erev Rav. They may have left Mitzrayim, but since they not imbibed the emunah that comes with eating the Korban Pesach and Matzah, they were still mired in the Tumah of Mitzrayim, and therefore might reconsider when faced with challenges. And just to end this essay, the words in 14 of the Arizal illuminate a strange and troubling pattern in our history. In every generation, people from within our own nation seek to pollute our spirituality. These people are remnants of the Erev Rav. Seemingly part of our nation, they lack both the Kabbalah Somachut Shamayim and the Emunah that the mitzvahs of Pesach invoke. And until this day, until the day when the entire world will achieve its rectification, these neshamas will still be there, threatening our existence as a holy and devout nation. Let's try to understand the idea that the Novitzke Rebbe is bringing based on the Arizal. What were these Erev Rav missing? What was the chisaron that led them to falling so easily? And it's clear that they were missing two mitzvahs. They were missing the mitzvah of Bris Milah, the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, as well as with the Korban Pesach was the achilas matzah, the eating of the matzah. So you think, okay, so they're missing eating matzah and Korban Pesach. It's not such a big deal. And the answer is, it is a big deal. The Ogadayahu speaks about, in source number 16, he says, when you see a reward for something in the Torah and or a punishment for something, that gives you a sense of the severity and the greatness of this mitzvah. If we find that both Pesach and Milah chayavim kareid al bitulam, if you don't eat if you eat chametz on Pesach, if you don't have bris milah, you're chayav karos. And we know that kareis means shenichrat mimekor achius. Whatever kareis is, practically, it's not relevant for us right this moment. But you are cut off from the source of life. If you're from the source of life, so therefore the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, the mitzvah of the night, the whole gestalt of Pesach, and Milah are about being connected to Hashem. Bet mitzvos ha'elu ki al yadam yeh lehem hadveikus v'shem yisparach. It's not like any mitzvah. The night of Pesach is a night of connection. And he goes on to stage, say mitzvah ha'mitzvos ha'elu heim hitzkashur b'nei Yisrael mekadosh baruch hu. Pesach is the link of the neshama and milah is the link of the guf. So what they were missing was not just, oh, we didn't do this mitzvah. They were missing the core that enables a person to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And if you don't have that, is it any wonder that they don't have that solid foundation that it's so easy just to disintegrate? But it goes deeper than that, my friends. They were missing not only Korban Pesach, and they were missing not only Milah, they were missing another mitzvah that came along with it that night, and that mitzvah was matzah. As again, they lacked both the Kabbalas Omoch Shamayim and the Emunah that the mitzvahs of Pesach might invoke. And this is true for us, my friends, right? Pesach's around the corner. We're right in the middle of Teve, almost at Shvat. What is Pesach about? Pesach is about the Chag of Emunah, not just in Yetziat Mitzrayim. It's about the Chag of Emunah for our lives. It's about every year when we eat the matzah, we're eating the mechla demusa, the bread of Emunah. It's like the booster shot for the entire year that whatever we go through, we're able to withstand challenges knowing the Ribbono Shel Olam is here. That's the power of matzah. But it goes even deeper than that. The Sifti Chaim, Rav Chaim Friedlander, points out, and he says in 17, Od Yeshul Va'er Ba'omek Ha'inyan, HaGeirush V'Mitzrayim Shebo Hashem Yitzbarach Levado B'Malach El TV. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did the exodus from Egypt in an above natural way. It was suddenly that they had to leave. Milamei Ba'ofen Galui V'Arura Shilton Hashem Al Abriya. It is so clear. What the whole Pesach story is about is that Hashem is ruling the creation. B'tzurah Yishirah B'Liv Sibo Tiviot. It's not about Teva. It's not about the natural order. V'chein ha-matzah, double underline, mevi'o tanu la-karash, shleima b'shilton Hashem. What is matzah about? It's about that Hashem rules the world completely by Himself. And, ka'amur, ha-kara, nomedem ha-matzah, yipiskaf, shleimun ha-muna. Matzah is the height, the apex of Amuna. Sheba'etzem ein teva kla. There's no natural order in this world. V'hakol hu b'ratzon Hashem kol rega. Everything is about the will of Hashem at every moment. So when we're talking about Emunah, the first and foremost, we have to recognize in ourselves, continue on the next page, the correct Hashkafa, Lichyot Alpia, to live along these lines, and that is Matzah. That is Michla de Musat. It's the bread of Refuah as well. There's no such thing as teva, sibal, mitzvah, that things go in the natural way that, you know, we plan A, B, and therefore there's going to be C. When you know the Ribbono Shel Olam runs the world, it's not about A, B, and C. It's about the Ritzon HaBorei. And the Ritzon HaBorei is not connected at all to the laws of teva necessarily. Sometimes, oftentimes, he works within teva. But it's the two do not have to at all be hand in hand. And we have to be able to integrate this idea. And this is what the Erev Rav was missing. They were missing that Yesod HaEmunah, that foundation of faith. The Korban Pesach, the Mila, and the Matzah taught them, which is, it's not about what you think and about how you can anticipate what the next step is going to be. It's about the Ribbono Shel Olam anticipating the next step. You know, going back to my trip to the bookstore, I always say that I go on these trips, you know, talking about picking up sparks, to find a sefer that hasn't yet come to Eretz Yisrael or I've never met, and to learn about new sfarim. That's what I'm, like, on the lookout for, you know. This is like I spy. So I had the schus of being in a very special chasheva family in Silver Spring, the rov of this particular community. And before Kiddush on Shabbos morning, I was looking through their library, which is a habit I have, and I saw this book on Emunah and Bitachon, and it just came out December 2022, and when I went to the bookstore in Baltimore, they had just run out of copies, and they were getting it the next day, and I was back the next day picking it up, and it's a sefer that I highly, highly recommend. It's Bitachon Daily by Rabbi Sutton, based on the Chovos HaLevavos, Shara Bitachon, and he brings it down in a very user-friendly way. And it's just a short piece every single day that just bolsters our Emunah and gives us things to think about. So I started it on my trip, so I don't know what day this is. It's within the first week or so. He tells a story which is such a perfect example of this. He tells the story of a fellow in Muncie who opened up, a musician who opened up a cafe, and for whatever reason, the cafe had closed, and he lost a lot of money on the investment. And all he had left from it was a $300 popcorn machine. And it was sitting in the basement, and one of his children had a party, so he took out the machine, and then his wife said, you know what, after this party, we're just going to throw out the machine. So they had this party, and they had the popcorn machine, and they also had the, what do you call it, the Safta, Sayer Safta, it's cotton candy. They had cotton candy as well. And this fellow decided, you know, just, you know, to try to put the cotton candy with the popcorn. And it was a very nice mix. And one of the girls came home and told her parents about this, and her parents put in an order for cotton candy with popcorn. And that's what he began doing. He began selling popcorn, this mixture of popcorn and cotton candy. I forgot even what it was called. And it landed up on the Oprah Winfrey Show as one of her picks. And he was selling this mixture for $18 or $16 a box. They had orders from here, you know, until Kalamazoo. And B'chasta Hashem, he became very successful. Now, this wasn't Teva. Teva is you open a cafe and you make money that way. Teva is not that on a whim you put cotton candy with popcorn and a girl likes it and she tells her parents and then somehow, you know, if he would try to get on the Oprah Winfrey Show, he would probably not have gotten on. The Ribbono Shel Olam has his ways. It's not Teva. It's not A plus B equals C. The Ribbono Shel Olam is the one in control of the world. And that's why the Sefer is so good. It has a lot of stories. It just brings these ideas very concretely into our lives. Now, let's take this idea one step deeper. Hold on tight. It's a little bit deep. And from now on, we're going to be a little bit deep. So just put your seatbelts on. And that's the Tali Chaim, the Chalvan. And he says, because of this Nekuda, that they weren't able, they didn't eat that matzah. They didn't have the Korban Pesach. They weren't able to move to this higher level of Emunah. This is the downfall of the Eruv Rav. And he says it's not by accident that the animal that they made was an egel. An egel shares the same root as Ayin Gimel Lamed, which is Igul, which is a circle. This world is referred to as a circle. Everything in this world is round, right? Everything Hashem created is round, right? You look at the fruit and vegetable stores, every vegetable, cucumbers, carrots, watermelons, it's all singular, it's all round, because that's the teva of this world. It just goes round and round. Look at people, our faces are round, some of us are rounder than others. This whole idea of everything that is in this world is round. My Bechinan Hegulim, 19 in the Dot, Ke'adu Alam, Hazel Levado Remez Besod Haigul, Shukulo Saviv Atzmo Lelo Kivun Matara. That's what this world is about. It's just going in circles with no specific destination. We're just, you never feel like I'm going in circles? Well, there's a reason. The world orbits. We're going in circles, right? We're going over and over again. Hatrua Magaliti Trua Machzurit. And that's why the sun and the moon and everything, the whole, you know, orbit of the earth. One generation comes, one generation goes. He goes on to say in the arrow that a tabat, a ring, is connected to the word teva. A tabat, which is round, is reflection of the teva of the natural part of Sibau Mesavav of this world. However, my friends, the Jews, and that was the Chet HaEgel. The Chet HaEgel is we don't have a leader. We need to create a leader. We need to have Teva. We need to have a natural order in this world. So the Eruv Rav, who didn't eat the matzah, wasn't able to move to that next step of there is nothing as natural. The world just isn't a circle. There's Ribbono Shel Olam in there. And that's where they got stuck. I remember reading an essay once by Y.Y. Jacobson describing some philosopher, I don't know, 19th century, 20th century, don't quote me on what century, who was saying that, along these lines, I'm paraphrasing, that if he could invent something, he would invent the ability for a fly to be able to look upward when caught in a bottle. And that's so deep, because you watch a fly just banging around and just going literally in circles. But he forgets to look upward and be able to get out. And that's our lives. That's the life of a Jew. The life of a Jew is we're not stuck in that fly, flying around in a bottle. We have the Ribbono Shel Olam. We have a way out. And that is described in the idea of a line. A line goes to infinity, but it's going somewhere. A circle is just going around and around. A line is headed in a direction. Or Hayosher, Ribechina Rachibur Shokolo Lomos, Dagarachad Darga, the end of 19, Adla'ila Mamish. It's one level after another until Ribbono Shel Olam himself, Kivyocho. That's what the Torah is about. That's the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael. That is the Bekav Ein Sof HaBokeya Kol Chalal HaGulim. It breaks through all of the circles and has a completely different destination. And hence, he points out in 21, it's not by accident that Yisrael, our name, is Yashar El. Straight one to Hashem. That's the difference. And that was the downfall of the Egel from the Igul, that they were caught in the worlds of Teva, in the natural world. They weren't able to extricate themselves from that world. And Klal Yisrael was able. Klal Yisrael, Mamet Har Sinai, Matzah, all of this is about looking up from that bottle and saying, when I'm in a difficult situation, and the doctors say there's no hope, and whatever it is, there's no hope, there's no hope, there's Ribbono Shel Olam, and Ribbono Shel Olam always has hope. And we live in a whole different world. You know, just to share another story, because it came to my mind, I'll share it very briefly. Rav Aaron Cutler had a son who was a tremendous, tremendous Talmid Chacham. And he got engaged to a young lady, and shortly after the engagement, he found out he was very sick, and he was, like, literally weeks to live. And everyone told this girl, you know, you better break the engagement. And she says, absolutely not. I want to marry Talmid Chacham, however short it is. And they went to Rav Moshe Feinstein, and Rav Moshe Feinstein said, if this is her desire, let her do this. And he blessed them with banim, with children. And Rav Moshe says, I want to be the Mitzvah Kedushin, which he was. And, you know, he gave them this bracha under the chuppah that they should be zocha to banim, to children. And it was a very sad chuppah because everyone knew this wasn't going to happen. They, you know, he was on death's door. But miracles of miracles, 9 months later she had a boy. And then she got worried because she realized that the bracha of Rav Moshe was banim to. And that after the second one, he wasn't going to be around anymore. So she went back. They went back to Rav Moshe. Should he, you know, go off and learn somewhere, and you know, not have a second child in order to extend his life? Rav Moshe says, "No, you have to live. You know, the Ribbono Shel Olam is in charge." And a few months later, she had the second child. And 2 or 3 days after the bris, he indeed died. The second son, Rav Aaron Cutler's son, died. And she was left with two little children, two babies. She got remarried to an Alman who also had two kids. And they tried having their own children. And they went from doctor to doctor. And the doctors told her, the situation that you have medically, it is impossible for you to have children. She says, but I have two kids. They said, it doesn't make any sense. It is impossible. There's no medical reason that you could have children. And she never had any more children. We don't know. We don't know what Mesiris Nefesh we do, what it creates in the heavenly worlds. We don't know, my friends. To think that A equals B equals C, that's A Refrab. That's the ego. That's the Igul. That's the circle. We live beyond the circle. We live on the straight line. We live where the Ribbono Shel Olam is in charge. So on this first level, my friends, we've did the first level. That was the very brief level. But the first deeper level, when we talk about that these were either the higher echelons or they were the prisoners, it doesn't necessarily have to be the prisoners the way we understand it. They are could be symbolically the people who were had these souls imprisoned within them. And the Erev Rav, Moshe Rabbeinu thought it was time for the rectification of these souls. And indeed it was not yet time. And these people who joined them only on the day, but not at night, were missing these fundamental aspects of Emunah, of the circle versus the straight line. That's why they fell into the ego and caused Klal Yisrael to have a disheartening of Emunah. That, my friends, is the first deeper idea of what this Eruv Rav is about. The second idea, and it follows through throughout Chumash. This is just a binyanav. Go through Chumash and you'll see, right? If it's a war on a natural way, they're not ready to fight. In a supernatural way, Hashem is fighting. It goes throughout the entire Chumash. The second idea is, who was this Erev Rav? So this, the Be'er Moshe brings down. Again, this is based on the Zohar Kadosh. She'Erev Rav, this is very fascinating in 22, Hayu chartumei mitraim v'chachameha. We meet in Parshas Va'era over and over again in Parshas Bo, the Khartoumim, these sorcerers, these Egyptians. And we know that, you know, you bring your magic to Egypt, right? It's like everyone was magicians there. The high-class Egyptian sorcerers were like, whoa, this is the real stuff. This is the real deal. And they were so enamored with all of these miracles, like they realized that they couldn't do. That's what drew them to Yiddishkeit. They said, we want to be part of a people that have the real thing. Like, they know how to do magic in a real way. Second paragraph in 22. What was the problem? They didn't believe in the Ribbono Shel'olam for the Ribbono Shel'olam. They believed in it for the miracles. And we already know the Rambam writes in the 8th chapter of Hilchos Seder Torah, the first halacha, Moshe Rabbeinu lo aminu bo b'nei Yisrael, b'nei otel shasta. Klai Yisrael didn't believe in Moshe Rabbeinu because of the signs that he did. If you're going to believe just because of miracles, you are a short-sighted believer. If you don't know where these miracles come from, that's why we believe in the Ribbono Shel'olam. Why? Because he is echad yochid miyuchad. He is unique. There's none other like Hashem. And that's the bottom line. It's not about the miracles. It's not about Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not about... That's where it's at. So if Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't come down, we're not going to be worried. Hashem is going to take care of us. But if you're believing only because of the magic, so to speak, that Moshe Rabbeinu did, you lose Moshe Rabbeinu, you lose your chief magician, you're in big trouble. And that's exactly what happened to the Eruv Rav, and that's why they had such a difficult time when Moshe Rabbeinu didn't come down. 23 in the squiggly, Vim Tisha, Lama Kirva, Moshe Raimemna, Lamrocha Shem Baruch Amar Lo Tchila Lo Tukabelo. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu take them if Hashem didn't think it was a good idea? Because Moshe Rabbeinu really wanted that this should be the Gula Shlema, the Tikkun HaShalem, when the whole world is going to believe their Ribbono Shel'olam, so which is what's going to happen in the future. So he really believed, like, you see, we try, Mamad Har Sinai, this was going to be it. Return back to the level of Adam Rishon before the sin. He really believed that we were at the cusp of redemption, and therefore, if the non-Jews want to come and believe in the Ribbono Shel'olam, Matova Manoyim. Now, I will make mention here that, and this is Torah Chesed, it's all based on the Zohar Kadosh, that the Eruv Rav, it says Va'eruv Rav Allah in the singular. It doesn't say Eruv Rav Alu in the plural, which the Zohar Kadosh seems to say that it was one group of people, not a mixture of nations, which seems to be what Rashi seems to say, Tarovet Shalgoyim. From the Zohar Kadosh, it was singular Allah. It could be the royal we, so you could answer Rashi. But it was one group of people, and those were the sorcerers that came. Among them were the two sons of Bilam Harasha. These were like the chief sorcerers that were there. Now, this is why, let's take it a little bit further, and we're going to talk about this in depth. There are two types of sorcerers. The sorcerers worked at midday. As you got to the source of the sun, moving toward the evening, where the evening is, the Hiskabrus Hadinim, right? The sun is at its height, and now we're moving toward the time of nighttime, which is Din. So there are two groups of people. There's the Erev Rav, those who are the great Erevs. Those are the ones who are able to do magic already at midday, towards the night. They can, you know, have 6 hours left till night and do magic. Erev Rav. Even though it's a long time till the Erev, they're doing magic. And then there's the Erev Katan. These are the lower level Machshefim sorcerers who need the power of the night, that energy, to be able to do the magic. And that's why when they saw Kiboshe Shmoshe, the Moshe was tearing from coming, when they saw that Ba Sheish, the sixth hour had come, which means now this is the time the sorcerers rear their head, this is why They now, at that time, came to Aaron and asked him to make the Ega. It is interesting to note that's brought down the Ramban and the Mamloes in 26a in the bottom right source, the asterisk. Ha'erev Rav Klal lo shamur l'sar d'ibram. Even though they were part of the Klal Yisrael, they weren't at Mamad Har Sinai itself. Indeed, the Zohar HaKadosh says, the Anei HaKavod did not surround them. They were outside with the animals. Michutz l'machane. So they didn't have that. You know, this is like the famous question. Like, how, after Mamad Har Sinai, could you think of doing an Ega? Well, the answer is very simple. If you didn't experience Mamad Har Sinai, it makes sense why you would do an Ega. And these individuals did experience it. In fact, they say, they didn't even eat of the man directly. The man didn't directly fall for them. They ate the leftovers of Klal Yisrael. So we understand here that they're like a second class. That they're part of the Jewish people. They have the obligations of the Jewish people. At the same time, they didn't have the same experiences that the Jewish people had. And then is it any wonder that they went back to what they knew and hadn't experienced this? Now, why all of this is, that's not our discussion for today. This is the Arizal. This is, you know, a little bit out there. So now, my friends, I want to learn a little bit of a few pieces from Rav Moshe Shapiro Zatzal's Sefer, or Rav Mandelbaum's Sefer of his Shirim, Mimamakim. And this stuff is very, very deep. I understand whatever I understand. I'll try to explain. It's many, 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 many pages in Parsha Ki Tisa. I want to highlight a few of the ideas and bring it down to our lives. Yes. Source 27. V'chol ha'golos v'chorban beit ha'migdash ha'kol yidei mashiki b'moshe le'evra. The golos, the Chorban, exile, the destruction of Beit HaMikdash was all the effect of the Erev Rav. Now, even though, and this is what I alluded to at the beginning, Lo Higlak HaRishbaruch Hu Ben Ha'umos Yisrael El Gedei Shitvatsu Alem Gerim, Hashem wanted us in Golos in order to get Gerim. Gerim are good. Gerim, you know, add a tremendous amount. Havala Erev Rav Heimitzat Hara. Erev Rav were the side of evil, right? Ayin Reish, the Ra. Oilano Kipana Hayom. This is, the Erev Rav were the ones that caused us the problems. Not all Gerim, but these type of Gerim. Now, we know, let's go a little bit deeper here, that, what does it mean that he says they're called Erev Rav? So we just spoke about this. This is the way, and this way I understand Rav Moshe Shapiro. What does it mean that their koach is toward the evening? So these people were his gabrus midat hadin. So the way that Rav Moshe Shapiro explains it in his Sefer on Breishi is Ribbono Shel Olam created a world where he gave us bechira chofshi, free will, to be able to act in this world, and that therefore allows us to gain reward in the next world. The problem is, and that's where why free choice exists, is that a person can say, I am doing things in this world for me, and I deserve it. And it has nothing to do with Ribbono Shel Olam. A person can live their entire life in this world, attributing everything to themselves, giving themselves the credit, and the world revolves around them, and they take the Ribbono Shel Olam out of this world. These people think in their mind, bedin, with justice, I exist because I'm doing what needs to be done. And that is the character trait and the fooling of the Erev Rav. These people were Erev. These people were nighttime people. These people were din, right? Nighttime is din. And the din is, it's all about me. It's not about the Ribbono Shel Olam. Forget the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's the idea of sorcerer. I can create magic. I can create whatever I want to create because the world revolves around me. And we know, in 28, let's learn together. That originally when Klal Yisrael stood at Mamad Har Sinai, they reverted back to Adam HaRishon before the Chet. What was the level of Adam HaRishon before the Chet? It was a complete understanding. She'ein lo metzius atzmois. He doesn't have his own sense of self. Ubitel yishutol kochabrichu. that it's all about the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's not about me. It's not a, you know, an egocentric world. It's a theocentric world. And that was so clear for Adam Arishon. And that was so clear for Klal Yisrael Mamed Har Sinai. The Erev Rav, this was not at all clear. In their mind, Madid, with justice, we are the ones in control of this world. We are the ones who get all the credit. That's why the Gra notes, Rav Shapiro Zatzal quotes the Gra Zatzal in Source 30, we'll start there, that when we talk about getting rid of our Chametz on Pesach, and the Erev Rav represents the Seor Shebi Issa, represents that negative force that's found within us. They represent the Chametz. What is Chametz? Ego. It's about me. What is Matzah? Humility. It's about the Ribbono Shel Olam. We have to get rid of it by the sixth hour. Again, reminding ourselves that the sixth hour, Sheish, Mol Sheish Lavo, represents the Erev Rav. By getting rid of it by the sixth hour, we're reminding ourselves we have to get rid of, and so to speak, nullify this Erev Rav mentality that sometimes creeps into us, that Chametz mentality, it's about Kochi Ve'otzem Yodi. And he says in 31 and 32 that this is really what Tfilas Mincha is about every day. We know that each one of the Avos instituted one of the davening, Avraham Avinu Shachrit, which is Chesed, Yaakov Avinu's Mariv, which is complete golos and darkness, and Yitzhak Avinu is Mincha, as it's moving toward the darkness, as it's moving toward the din. What's the whole persona of Yitzhak Avinu? It's Gvura. The whole persona of Yitzhak Avinu is the idea of I'm ready to give my life over to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's not about me. It's about the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's Yitzhak Avinu. He was the Ne'akad, the one who was ready to sacrifice himself on the altar for God. And it's not by accident that Yitzhak Avinu, whose mita is gvura, is strength, is linked to the mita of busha. Ubavur tiyeh yirato al penechem. The whole reason for the Mamed Har Sinai was that fear should be on your face. And the Chazal understand this idea of fear of boshet panim, of having this humility, of recognizing it's not about us, it's about the Ribbono Shel Olam. And hence, my friends, we have two times of mincha. We have mincha gedola and mincha ktana. Mincha gedola is already as soon as the midday breaks. Mincha ktana is toward the end of the day. Why do we have two minchas? It reminds us, or two times for mincha, it's one mincha. It reminds us of the Erev Rav. The Gra explains there's two types of Erev Rav. One Erev Rav is already at Chatzot, where they're able to start already 6 hours before, you know, after the morning breaks. Just as soon as the sun is moving toward din, they're out there. At the same time, they don't see the end result, right? The darkness is yet to come. He says that Mincha Ketana is a greater Erev Rav. They see the darkness. They see their own fallout. They see that the sun's going to be gone, that they're not going to survive. And yet they still are involved in Kishuv. That's even a greater Erev Rav. That's in a greater chutzpah than, okay, in the middle of the day, you don't know what's going to be. But at the end of the day, you know, the sun's going to come down and you still think you're in charge. And that, my friends, is the Mida on this second level of the Erev Rav. Azus, brazenness, chutzpah. We're going to believe in ourselves till the last moment, even when in front of us it's so clear the sun is going down, doesn't matter, we still think it's about us. We still think we're in control. And that is the quality that the Erev Rav brings into Klal Yisrael. And that's really the tug of war. We know the Sefer I've been pushing for the last few months, another Sefer in Amunah, Rabbi Elias Animamin. If we recognize 33, that every single thing we see and experience is from Hashem alone, and no other force exists that can cause anything to happen, then we must constantly review every occurrence, personal, communal, global, through the prism of His directing these events. Our follow-up question then will always be the same. What does He want now? What can I do to fulfill His plan? My mind constantly assesses such each vicissitude of life through this viewpoint of Kadosh Baruch Hu, running of the world, whether I'm pondering the election, the weather, or my day at work. My opinions and decisions are molded based on what's good for Kodesh Baruch Hu's corporation. It's all from the lens of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's Bittul. Azus is about, it's about me. It's about what's comfortable for me. It's what feels good for me. That was the era of Rav. It feels good for me to have a leader that I can, you know, manipulate, so to speak, through making this ego. So that's what we're going to do. And that is the quality that the era of Rav has brought into our generation. The Gra elsewhere points out that there are three klipos, three different aspects that have affected Klal Yisrael, and the Rosh Tevet of Choshech. There's the Chamor, the Shor, and the Kelev. The Shor is let's start slowly. The Koach HaKasani, Beruach Shabam Magaiva Ruach Voha, the Taiva Benefesh Rechava, Ki Taiva Nafsham. And he explains the following word, source 34 on the next page. The first aspect is the chamor. The chamor represents taiva, desire, right? Chamor is from chumriyot, the physical world. That's yishmael, that's the klipa of yishmael, and that's the klipa of taking chesed and going off with it, just desiring everything. The next klipa is gaiva, is kas, which is the shore, and the shore is obviously related to the egel, and hence making egel is this idea of gaiva, of, you know, I'm in charge, I'm in control. That's very much Esav. Bechor Sharo Hadarlo, the Shor is about Hitnasur, being able to rule over others. And the third is a combination of both, and that's the Kelev. That's the dog. And the dog are the Azei Panim Shebador. Those are the brazen people of the generation. The Klipa of Yishmael and Esav, as bad as they are, they're external to us. The problem of the Erev Rav, it's becoming, it's part and parcel of us. And that's why the Midazu Shel Azus 34b and the little dot, Hu Hefech Midatam Shel Yisrael, it's the exact opposite of Klal Yisrael's Mida, which are Baishanim, which are this shame in a healthy type of way. Uboshim Maktinim Mitzvotam Klapeyam. It's like, I know my place. I'm not going to be brazen enough to think that I can do. It's everything about me. He says in the footnote, very fascinating, in 35, that many of the Erev Rav joined up with Shimon. And that's why you find in the story, again with the word Am, that they were involved in the story of the Benot Moav. Again, this brazenness, the Metzach Yishav Zalnah. This is all about Shimon. And Shimon is the counter to this. Shimon is about listening. I have to hear what you have to say. Shema, Shimon. And therefore, they Davka took that Shevet, whose Mida is Busha, and was able to like almost counter it. And that's why he says that Shimon are the Melamdei Tinokos. They're the ones who teach Torah. And they're the paupers who go from door to door. Being a pauper creates a sense of humility. Now, the key here, before we're going to wrap this up into one or two final ideas, is the idea of the Gra and others in 37. Ve'omnam kiblu merabotenu she'ikar hisgabrus bechinat ha'erev rav yebesof ha'golos. The Erev Rav is with us in every generation. We have people from within, as we saw in the Novodvinsky Rebbe Zatzal, that start up with us. Chazal tell us that the end of time, the Erev Rav is going to find their final hoo-ha. And that is what the Gemara describes, the end of Masechet Sota. How do we describe our generation? We describe our generation as Chutzpah Yisaget, where chutzpah is going to be the name of the game. And the whole 39 goes through this Gemara, through this Chazal. Hamalchut tafech l'minos. Our kingdom will turn into minos, into people who don't believe. Again, this feeling of kfira. I go against Hashem in a public type of way. That's azus. That's brazenness. That's the Erev Rav. Chochmat tzvarim. Timrach v'irei chet ma'atzo, the atzus and the chutzpah is going to be such that people are not going to recognize the greatness of the chachamim of our generation and their sfarim. So they don't have to bow down to them. They don't have to humble themselves. Vein tochecha, you won't accept rebuke. Na'arim p'nei zekenim yalbinu, the young are going to humiliate the old. This is our generation. This is what we're living in, right? You know, they say, I forgot which rabbanim it was, that were sitting on a bench and two people passed by and they didn't acknowledge this rabbanim. So one rav said to the other, you know, they didn't acknowledge us. He says, you know, in the times of Mashiach, what's going to be is that they're going to be sitting on the bench and they're going to be wondering why we're not acknowledging them, right? And that's what we're living in today, where people don't have this sense of awe to the Tamidei Chachamim. It's this asus, it's this brazenness that we could do whatever we want, whatever feels good is good, it's all about me, it's all about, and that humility is what's missing. And hence we understand the last page in Source 40, when Chazal say in Pirkei Avos, Perakei, Hu Haya Omer, Az Panim L'Gehenim, the brazen face to Gehenim, U Boshet Panim L'Gan Eden, and those who have that Boshet Panim, that humility, will go to Gan Eden, Yuratzol Fanecha Shem L'Kinu Shibane Beis HaMikdash, Tibane Beis, Shidibane Ircha B'nei Rabbi Yameinu V'Secho HaKinu V'Sar Secha, that the Beis HaMikdash should be built. So what's the connection? No, we understand the connection. When we're able to get rid of the Azus of the Erev Rav and be able to embrace the Busha of Mamad Har Sinai, so that's when the Gula is going to come. And again, this Busha, as we've seen before, Rabbi Dr. Pelkowitz's step-by-step father and son writing this, 41, in Western culture, shame is typically viewed as a negative emotion. Weakness, vulnerability. Judaism, contrast, views shame in the proper context as a core component of the Jewish personality. If one does not possess the attribute of shame, it's proof that his ancestors did not stand at Sinai. And again, they weren't at the actual Mamad Har Sinai. We see this. The primary function of positive shame is to serve as a breaking system, allowing one to question whether he really wants to sin. Shame leads to fear of sin. Therefore, it was said, it's a good sign if a man is prone to shame. Any man who experiences shame will not sin readily. The Orcho Sadiqim, therefore one should make every effort to conduct himself in accordance with this noble trait and to employ wisdom in cultivating it until planted in his soul. He should enthrone it above all the other impulses, regard it as more important than other traits, for through it he will attain most of the virtues and guard himself against all unseemly traits. And he says at the end, quoting Rabbi Twersky, where he says, one should ask oneself a basic question, am I not better than this? Does this behavior reflect who I truly want to be? That's that sense of, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? Which is the exact, and is this the appropriate thing to do for the Rebbe Shalom? Which is the exact opposite of asus, of I'm in control. It's all about me. Let's summarize and end with an idea. An innocuous pasuk. In the name of Rav, join them with their livestock and the animals. Who were the Erev Rav? Lots of people. They were either the prisoners, they were the magicians, they joined with Klal Yisrael, they really believed. Idea one, well, how could they fail? Because they were uninitiated. And people go back to what they're used to, and that's what happened to them. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to take them because he really believed this was Rechush Gadol, this was the great wealth that Avraham Avinu had intended when leaving Egypt. Taking this deeper, these were the souls from all the sparks that were not purified in the time of Adam Arishon, that just went off and astray. These went through many Gilgulim, Dura Mabul, Dura Flug, a stone. And here, Moshe Rabbeinu really felt like this was going to be their final tikkun, this was going to be their final rectification. What were they missing? They were missing the night of Pesach. The night of Pesach is Bris Milah, Korban Pesach, which is connection to Hashem, the soul and the body. And they're missing the mitzvah of Matzah. Matzah is the Michlah de Amnusa, and Matzah for us, as a takeaway, is that which gives us, eating the Matzah every year, gives us that booster shot of Emunah, that we know that things aren't because they have to be. You can be a millionaire on popcorn and cotton candy. There's no logical. You can have children, even if the doctors say it's impossible. Because this is Ribbono Shel Olam in the world. They built the Ego, which is circles. Yisrael, Yashar El, we're able to see the top of the fly bottle and be able to extricate ourselves into that line, into that purpose, into having direction. The second aspect, these were the magicians. They believed, wow, this is amazing stuff. We want to join up. But they were joining for the miracles. They weren't joining for a real relationship with Hashem. They were always on the outskirts, always with the livestock. They weren't part of Mamar Sinai. They weren't part of the Anei HaKavod, and therefore, they never really believed. They, it was all about themselves. That midah of asos, of brazenness, of erev rav, toward the din, toward the nighttime, which is that we can control things, that we are in charge. It's not about the Ribono Shel Olam. It's our judgment. We can create our own reality. Erev Rav, they believe in the greatness of the Erev, the greatness of the darkness of we are in control. And hence they at the time of the sixth hour they were able to wanted to make the Ega. We stop eating chametz. We have to remind ourselves when we stop at that sixth hour, what we're doing is we're trying to minimize the impact of the Erev Rav every year. We have to understand that davening mincha every day is to remind ourselves in the middle of our day, it's not about the great business deal I just did, it's not about the great cake I just made, it's about the Ribono Shel Olam. He's in charge, and I have to let go and allow myself, Yitzchak Avinu, Moshe, Yira, to recognize that limitation. The Ribono Shel Olam is running the show. The Ikvas of Mashiach, our time period, is a time where Azos, the Minos, is running wild. It's all about how you feel, whatever you do, whatever you create. And we forget the Ribono Shel Olam in this picture. And we're living at a time where the Erev Rav is infiltrating into our lives to the extent that you can decide what sex you want to be because I'm in control. I'm in control of my own identity. That's Erev Rav. That's what we're dealing with even within our camps. Our final idea, 44 and 45, is the Shem Yishmor. Shem Shmuel offers the Gevaldik Vort. He says, why indeed did Moshe want to bring them in? So Moshe Rabbeinu had this vision that Klal Yisrael were going to be the Am HaNivchar, were going to be the chosen nation. And as the chosen nation, they were going to be so exalted and so high, as the Baruch Chaim describes, we say in our davening, beyond any language can describe. It's not just that we're greater than all the nations. We're beyond Romotanamikolos. No language can describe the greatness of Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid that being this great and this exalted, how are we going to relate to the Goyim to be an Or like Goyim? Having the Erev Rav, they were going to be the medium. They'd be part of the Jewish people, but not to the same extent as, right, Pascha Zuma, some only happened to the Jews, not to them. They weren't part in the same way. And he felt they would be the perfect medium to link the Jewish people with the rest of the world. That was the vision Moshe Rabbeinu had. In the end, it wasn't going to work. And now we have this responsibility that we have to be the Or LaGoyim. We can't allow anyone else to be that intermediary. We have to go out and inspire. And the biggest way to inspire is to live a life where clearly in everything we do, the Ribono Shel Olam is present. And when we're able to daven mincha and realize it's not about the Erev Rav, it's not about we are in control, but the Ribono Shel Olam is in control, we then offset the Erev Rav, and with that, we'll be zocha for the Geula Shleimah.